Blog Talk.
Well,
this meeting is being recorded.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News, also one of the founding members of Black Men Unifying Black Men. And one of the purpose for us to bring this publication or this podcast to you is because we want to share information. Not only share, we would like to discuss information with you as well. And sometimes we would like to even partner with you so we can share information together. But, you know, by any means, we are communicators. But even on top of that as well, we are doers. You know, we just don't just talk about things. You know, we take action on things that we can change. And so we want to welcome you to the podcast this evening. Matter of fact, it's a simulcast because brother, my partner, co-host, brother Satawi Jaheed is also blasting us on Blog Talk Radio as we speak. And we also on Facebook Live and other formats. So we welcome all of these different formats to the podcast. This evening, before I talk a little bit about that, the three people I want you to meet, I see another young Mr. Murphy on there. I haven't seen him in a while. How you doing, Mr. Murphy? So you stop me from talking. But in any case, yes, and but my co-host, he would be on in a few minutes, but I just want to share a little bit of information about the National Black Unity News. With everything, you know, it has a season. But, you know, some things are here today and gone tomorrow. But in my heart of hearts, I believe that the National Black Unity News is here to stay way beyond my time limit on this earth. And I also tell people by this publication come from by divine inspiration. So I was inspired. No, I just didn't say, hey, let me just start doing these things. But, you know, step by step, moment by moment, inspiration by inspiration, I was led to do what I do, and I believe, no, without a shadow of doubt in my mind, that the people involved in this publication are led as well. Because I cannot figure out, and I probably would never will figure out, how many great minds has come together for the sole purpose of uplifting us as a people. And I haven't seen, I've been working for this all my life, and I'm sincere about this. All my life, I've been pretty much fighting for unity, even when I didn't even know I was doing it at the time. But one thing I had, something just recently happened, and it really opened my eyes. You know, sometimes when you look for things and you work for things all your life, sometimes if you really believe and you work hard, you can get it. You know, nobody can really hold you back sometimes but you sometimes. But the thing that I received just recently, the last year or two, was this thing we call unity. And unity is a powerful word. It can mean a lot of different things sometimes. But unity is for people like myself. It's for Black people, African-American, melanated people to come together, conscious-minded people, Black people. Just, you know who I'm talking. You know who I'm speaking to. Is this, because there's been a lot of, since my time being on this earth and before my time, there's been a lot of disparity that has taken place not only in this country but all over the world. Just because of the color of our skin. People have problems all over the world with us because of this skin problem. But I'm going to tell you this. I also believe that based on scientific facts, history, that we are the original people as well. Because as scientists will tell you about melanation and how it works, we can produce all sorts of colors. But all sorts of colors cannot produce us. And so I believe that there. I'm not a scientist. I have my thoughts. You have yours. That's why I'll be on this call right now. But before we get started, I just want to remind people that, you know, you need to support this publication because this publication is here to support you. And we have solution-oriented information in this publication. It's online as well as a physical hard copy that you can get as well. And we have a lot of people. We have several on here right now with us that's a part of the National Black Unity News or have worked pretty much closely with us over the years. And before we get started, as always, I want to introduce you to my partner, brother Satawi Jaheed. He always has something positive, something very influential to say about a reading that he always does. It's part of our process because we'd like to start off with something positive and good. Brother Satawa, you got it, sir.
We do each time we come on these airways. We do reading from Daily Motivations, African American Success. The author of that book is Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. And the reading for the day goes like this. I have a dream. There's nothing mysterious about success. It's the ability to stay mentally locked in. That quote is from Montel Williams, talk show host. Reading for the day. Success is creating a state of mind that allows you to obtain the desires of your heart. Success resembles human survival. Both depend on future vision, seeing ourselves in specific situations as healthy, thriving, and full of positive expectations. As a college student in Houston, Texas, Dr. Barbara King, pastor of Hillside True Southern Atlanta, Georgia, overcame a life-threatening bout with tuberculosis. When she was cleared to resume her studies after spending 4 years in a sanitarium, Dr. King discovered that her classmates had either graduated or dropped out while she was convalescing. Now faced with doctor bills as well as tuition, she worked as a maid on campus to get through school. After finally completing her coursework, she was asked how she managed to endure. What powers did she possess that others lacked? How did she manage to stay focused? She gave a clue in a speech before a group of college hopefuls. I never thought of quitting, she said. I kept my eye on the prize. I had faith. There's enough faith in the world to accomplish anything, but you must claim this faith for yourself. Claim it. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't be what you want to be. Claim it and believe it. Believe in yourself. Believe that you have something to give to the universe. Focusing your energies in a single direction can work wonders. If you want something badly enough, long enough, and consistently enough, don't be surprised if you get it. Today I will focus my mind on my goals. And that's a powerful story about a lady who had, you know, a vision. She said, you know, hey, she needed to make sure she finished college. And she went to do some things and about with tuberculosis and, you know, made it through that and, you know, had to, she had to do what she had to do to get to where she needed to be. So that's what I want to say about that, and I hope people enjoy the reading that we have for today.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. You know, I'm going to change a little direction today because, like I say, you never know who you're going to run into on this show or who may come on board with us. And there's a couple of gentlemen, since they're already here, I'm going to put a little spotlight on them. You know, the reason why I want to do this, because this is what I do. I consider myself a servant of servants. I'm here to serve people, especially those who are out there serving people. If, see, I can help them to get their, them to where they want to go, then I can get to where I need to go. And that's us helping us, eagle togetherness, unity. And there's a gentleman I've known for a long, long time. Long time. I even know his people. Because his people are my people. Buddy Murphy, you know, I'm coming your way, sir.
Yeah.
And you know, he comes from good folks. This I know. And, but yes, but he also providing a great service as well. And especially during this time, you know, we all know that this COVID, this last year and a half, been somewhat new on all of us. It affects everyone. One way or another. But people find themselves in some bad situations. Even before this happened, people were in bad situations, but this just made it even greater. People have some choices they're going to have to choose from. You either sit there and you wallow in your misery, give in, give up, give out, or you can fight back. Lift your head up. There's all kinds of ways. You may not can rely on that same job you had 6 months or a year ago or 2 years ago. But there's always a way out if you believe. Now, this gentleman, Mr. William Murphy, is in an interesting program because, like I said, a lot of people never even thought they would be in this situation or finding themselves in one. So, Mr. Murphy, before me start telling the story, tell them who you know. Is this who you are? Introduce yourself, but tell them what you do.
Hey, good evening, everyone. My name is William T. Murphy, and the T stands for sometimes terrific or terrorist, one or the other. And on some occasions, my wife would call me terrific, and on some days she will say terrorist. But hey, I'm William, but my nickname is Buddy, and I am a relative, family member of David Murphy, and I am so grateful to be able to have an opportunity to get on this platform now because things have been confusing for, and I wouldn't really say confusing, I became a little complacent. And you ever have so much stuff on your plate where as though you can't even see the plate?
Mm-hmm.
Where as though the plate is so, I mean, you're looking to say, well, where does the plate end? Where does it begin? Where is the bottom of the plate? And I've had that. Yeah, that's one of the things y'all called me. I'm going to have some of these interruptions. I apologize. But as far as the credit restoration and the stuff as far as involving credit, I've been working on that. We have our real estate business that we are trying to launch. Well, we launched that already. So we have that going. We have the real estate business going. She had the nail situation going. We also provide people with vacations. Anybody that wants to go on vacation, they only have to spend $99. And $99, they go on a tour. We are involved with a company called Westgate. We're also doing that. She also had the nail business. So we had all these things on the plate, plus we're in the process of selling our home because we would like to move to the suburbs. We would like to finally get out of the city and take a risk and with God's blessings. And I'm sure that God will never lead us any place that, you know, he doesn't watch over us. In other words, God's will won't take us no place where his grace won't keep us. So I'm positive of that. But, you know, the reason why I had to get back on this platform is because I had to get back on track. This platform and the Black Action Network here has given me a platform that I did not take advantage of. And with this credit restoration, education, credit enhancement, and helping people improve, that was something that touched my spirit. There's nothing like being able to help somebody. I come from a very, very horrible past, and God saved me from that past. And I understand exactly why he saved me. He didn't save me just for me. He saved me so I could be able to help somebody else. So with this credit thing, I having all this stuff, I wasn't able to focus like I was able to focus. So I said, let me get on this platform because I know that on this platform, there's people that are willing to help. There's people that's willing to give advice, give direction. And that's what I needed. I needed to get centered again so I can start helping people again. So my number one baby right now, and I just got some business cards that are just coming up and they're just getting ready to be printed. About the credit restoration, and hopefully I'll be able to help some people out. But I, you know, I just needed to get that out there. David, I apologize to you and all the people here that are on this platform about missing so many of these, but I'm here at work right now, but I said I had to get on. I said, God, please provide me with some quiet, comfortable place in this hospital so that I'd be able to get on, and here I am. So thanks.
Amen. All right. Well, let me just say this to you, sir. You know, I love to hear what you just said because, you know, like I say, we all, like I said, I constantly go through a battle with me. I'm being honest, you know, it's not easy being me.
Right.
And because my mind would take me here, there, and everywhere if I allowed it to. But one thing about God, he always has the way of knowing how to pull you back in and to keep you focused, even though we go left and right sometimes. But, you know, he keep us on that road to where he needs you to be. And I appreciate you for that. And I'm just going to share with you out there, if you're going through something right now, That's why the brothers out there right now, because all of us fall short sometimes in our finances and a whole lot of other things. And if you're going through something right now and you need to find a way out, Mr. Murphy, I don't know if you can come back on or not, but you know, you can get the information from the National Black Unity News. But if you can give out your information, if you like, you know, somebody needs your services, how they can call you or something.
Okay. What I want to do is I want to be able to put it in the chat. I don't have, because I want to make sure everything is correct. I should be, all that information should be in the papers right now.
It is, it is. Yeah, but those who make, like I said, we on a lot of format. So it's not, I can put it on, I don't have it on me right now. So.
Yeah, yeah, because I don't have, you know, and I don't want to put the wrong information, because there was some stuff that was updated. And the new business cards that I have are coming out. So, and as far as phone numbers and stuff like that, because we got new phone numbers, we got a 1-800 number that's going to be, and I don't have that information on the computer.
Okay, no problem. Guess what? For those who, because I'm on here every week, and those people know how to get in touch with me, so I can get them that information. If you need the services, just give me a call. And but thanks a lot, Mr. Murphy, for your time, for coming on with us. But I also want to bring another brother on here. Mr. Robert Cotton, are you still there? If you are, unmute yourself. How you doing, sir? This is another brother who I go a long way back with. He always been in this technology area and health and fitness and things like that. But he's always, every time I got around this brother, he always had something interesting he was doing. Something so unique that most people never had even thought of sometimes. And but the things that he did have, I know they worked. And so I'm going to let you tell him just a little bit about himself and what he's currently doing. Mr. Robert Cotton, you got it, sir.
Well, thanks for allowing me to spend this little time. I just want to read something real quick from a book that I'm reading. And the book is called, Is Your Environment Stressing You Out? And there's a verse in the Bible that says Proverbs 9:9-11. And it states, give instruction to a wise man, he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. For the fear of the Lord is beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding. For by me thy days shall be multiplied, and the years of thy life shall be increased. And I say that to say is that I want to give you credit that you, I think, have allowed God to lead you in this here information age of your newspaper and your website and everything to allow our people to get information that they can live a better life. And with that, my wife and I have a health ministry we've been doing for about 23 years. And one of the things that we do is we learn, we live, and we share the things that's going to help our community, and especially the Black community, be healthy, because I believe that your health is your wealth. And that's what, unfortunately, in our community, maybe other communities too, we have things like diabetes, obesity, cancer, allergies, ADHD, and they're unfortunate. We're dealing with this COVID epidemic. But if we would allow our immune system that God gave us to be at the max we can, we can be in a better shape to deal with some of these so-called issues that are happening here in life. So that's what we're about, David, and I thank you for giving me this time.
Okay, now, if you would like to get some, if somebody wanted to get to you and want to find out about some of this information, how can they do that?
My phone number is 443-469-0047. That's 443-469-0047.
All right, thank you, sir. Now that I did my commercials highlighting people who highlighting us, I'm going to jump on this conversation me and my brother had with this morning. He was telling me, Robert Cotton, maybe you can help me out on this. You may know something on this subject matter about this COVID you just mentioned. He was telling me that he read, or his brother Satai, he can say it best, that he heard something about people going to have to start taking this third shot now. You know, so Brother Satavi, can you enlighten us on, you know, what you was hearing earlier today?
Pfizer came out and they're looking to get approval from the government so they can issue the third shot. So That's what I heard. And, you know, you people can research it for themselves. But, you know, the number one thing to do is just make sure your immune system is strong so you don't have to get no shots. Because,
well, let me ask you all something on this question here, because it bothered me. Like I said, I'm not the brightest bulb in the pack, neither the dullest. But I like to look up stuff sometimes if I don't know what the full thing is. If I still don't know it all the time, but I still look it up, research it. This word immune or immunity, I talked to a few people about it because it bothered me. First of all, it said that it's part of your system, your inner system, where it fights off certain things, immunity. It fights off certain diseases or viruses or something like that. Your body rises up and fight it. But then, see, man comes in, he do what he has to do. You know, he add chemicals and everything to it. But, you know, I think God put this natural things into us. But then you take that same word, and then you can move it in a courtroom. He was granted immunity from this situation or that situation. Or these people are granted immunity or privileges this way or that way. And I looked at it. Then I went a little further. Then I heard this thing called herd immunity. And this thing says that when a group of people or the majority of the group goes this way and go that way and to protect themselves and their selves. I got some heavy people coming on this call. And so, you know, but you know, when I was reading all of this, the definitions of it, you know what it sounded just like to me? It sounded like racism. You know, even within the body, you know, I know it's fighting off, but when you look at the definition of the words, I could switch that same word over to racism. You know, like I say, the majority wants to go this way, herd immunity. Some people are granted immunity because they are such as this or such as that, and that word kind of bothers me, because as we were discussing it with another friend, he's on here now too, a brother named Umoja, and I see Brother Cripp on here now. But this word immunity, you know, we have to be extremely careful with words, because words, like I say, you know, like even the Bible tell you, you know, life and death comes out of the tongue. You can add years to your life, or you can take some away. You know, you can curse a person and bless them at the same moment. And if you read things, and like I said, in the way this thing was reading, it didn't say exactly what the word meant, but it said it had the first thing in all of these senses. The thing said the ability to do these things. This immunity had the ability to do this, the ability to do that. And so if you don't have, like I say, and if I said I changed it over to racism, because certain groups of people in this country have the ability to keep some people in check or keep them at a certain position in life, because they have the ability. And those who don't have the ability to fight at all, then you got, I guess you just lost the way a lot of people are. I ain't going to say us, but you know, but I'm just going to say this though. But reading these definitions, and here I am publishing a newspaper dealing with words, all types of words, all types of people with words. And I do, like I said earlier, you know, you can say some powerful things out of your mouth. Even I have the ability, as this thing says, the ability. That's why the government watches me right now till this day, is because I have the ability to cause problems. I have a newspaper. I can incite stuff. I can say stuff about people. I can even say I even heard. It's legally said. I can do it legally. That's what they do. I heard it said. This, that, and I don't have to give up my resources. But I could slander any one of you on here, and most people, if I wrote it and was in a newspaper, they would believe it. I could damage you. Yeah, you can come back and damage me, but those words that went out there, like the Bible said, they don't come back void. Once they go out there, it ain't too much you can do with them. They just circulate. People take it one way or the other. And so I want to ask some of you on here about words, because that's my subject. tonight is words and how we say words, how we use words, how we use words for us and how people use words against us. And we got all types of course, we all know we got all types of documents that we put our John Hancock on or our signature on, signing over, just but don't know what we're signing on to because we don't understand the words, the verbiage that's taking place out here. I take all types of medicine, like the Robert Cotton, no, all types of them, don't know what I'm putting in my system, causing havoc on my immunity system. I talk to all kinds of people, say, hey, this is the way to go. All you do, just like you say, sign your name, give me your money, and this, that, and then and it's done. And none of us know experts, you know, in all these different fields. But like I say, these words that's being tossed around here, these words that's being told to us, I'm beginning to really look at this thing very seriously. Because, like I say, words are so powerful to me now. And that's why I don't have no problems. Never did have problems. That is the way I say things. Because I have, again, the ability to do certain things in life. But then again, if you have the ability, you can also pay the price for those who are in the majority, as they put it, with the ability. They can say this or do this to you. Because they have the ability to do this to you without any consequences. They can get immunity out of the courtroom because they are privileged in some areas and you are not. And I just want to open up a conversation about words. And I know there's ministers on here, there's activists on here. Y'all can take that word ability or just the human language, and we can toss it up there. You know, it can do anything. But one thing you say, it won't do. It won't come back void. Once it's out there, it floats. It's in the atmosphere. And of course, with the National Black Unity News, we like to take our words as a group to call it what you say, not only a lifestyle change, but to enhance people's quality of life, not to, you know, bring people down or try to destroy people. That's never been my thing. But as a man, as a father, as a community activist, even the Bible speaks on this too. It's a time for this and it's a time for that. It's a time to speak and it's a time for war. So where do you draw the line at? In your life, what time is it for you? I'm gonna tell you this, and I'm gonna shut up for a minute. There's a thing that says also that we have not because we ask not. There's also a time when people fear or afraid to say this or afraid to say this or that, not only to each other but to our own family members sometimes. Sometimes we call ourselves protecting us, but sometimes when we don't speak truth to power, we hurt ourselves. And so, Umoja, you on here?
Yes, I am.
Now, we had a little conversation this morning, and you were telling me, because you like words, you love words so much, you know, you like the definition of words. I call you a wordsmith. And so, that conversation I had with you earlier about this word, immunity, or how you ever pronounce it, and I told you personally, I say it sounds like this word relates so closely to racism to me, and you told me something. What was that you told me?
Well, racism and immunity is very far from one another, actually. Because racism truly has nothing to do with color. It has more to do with a position of power. So when you are trying to compare the situation with immunity of this disease or this affliction with racism, may be a little far out there. Racism is, like I said, it's a position. it's a position. I could use the word I don't like to use of hatred for some another people that you are higher over because you have control over them. This virus that we're dealing with is not that. Has nothing to do with that. I can't see how we could compare that. Not with this virus, except if you delve into it just a little deeper and realize that those who created the virus, and I do not believe that the virus is a naturally occurring thing, those who created the virus did it for their own personal gain. And if you want to think that they did it just to hurt black people or brown people, that would be considered racism. But in actuality, statistically, more of them passed away from it than the black and brown. So if that's what they was trying to do, they made a mistake. They made a big mistake. But their overall goal was achieved. I don't know whether or not y'all followed it like I did, but I was telling my son that millions of people lost their jobs, lost their homes, lost their businesses. And instead of this country going into a depression, the stock market went up. When everybody should have been going, becoming poor, the rich people became richer. And then last month, what blew me away was when I found out that this country, billionaires increased by 30% during the COVID, which truly led me believe that this affliction was a motivated thing. By who? I don't know. I don't think it was by people of brown or black. But, you know, if you want to put it in that category for racism, I could accept it. But just out-and-out racism without actual proof other than the theory that I have compiled with all of the things that has happened, and I've seen them. And I've kept the calculations of the people dying, where they died, and all that other stuff. You know, that's the only racism I can see is 1% of what is not 1%, it's actually something like 0.1% of the people that's making the money in this country. And they don't like poor white people either. And racism, like I said, is a position. They don't like white people either.
They just don't like people. They just like power, right?
They like power, money and power. It's not the people. It had nothing to do with people. People always look at the color. It had nothing to do with people. It's the power and the money that they will. And as I said, the billionaires in this country increased 30% during a time when it seemed like this country should have been in a recession or a possible depression. Something is wrong with that picture.
Yeah, I can see that. But let me go here then. Brother Cliff, can you unmute yourself for a minute? This is another brother that I'd like to introduce you all to, Brother D. Cliff. To me, he has a lot of solutions to, when I think, I'm talking about black people myself. Now, you know, but you know, like you say, you can play with words all kinds of ways. Like I said, I can call myself, I do call myself this, a soldier. I don't tell you what army I'm in, but I just say I'm a soldier. I can be a soldier. Now, some take it this way, and I believe I'm that too, a soldier of God. I believe that. That's me. But also, I believe I'm here for my people. I'm a soldier for my people as well. I believe that, you know. Now, people, I do know this, that people have taken words and misused them to mean something else. And I also know what, Umoja, what you were speaking about this power thing. Like I said, you know, that don't have no cover. That's just power, just wants power. And controlling things. But I do know one thing, and this is factual as well. All over this world for the last, I can remember, last 30, 40 years now, there's been this great conversation going on about this power and who controls it and who runs it. And so these group of leaders supposed to come from all over the earth, from the United States and all of these other countries come together and have this thing they call a summit. And they want to discuss world issues. And one of the top two or the top three always has been this one subject matter, overpopulation. So something they come up with, they think something has to be done. And it seems like every time from my perspective, I look at things that way sometimes. Every time I see when these things happen, when they had these great conversations and they put this as an urgent issue that it has to be dealt with, all of a sudden, one of these unearthed diseases pops up, like AIDS and Ebola and all of these kind of things. Every time they had these type of meetings, multitudes of people leave the earth from some type of catastrophe, something in the water, something in the air. Now they got something to go in your head. They got something to go anyway now. Technology, cotton tech, they got all kinds of technology. You'd be surprised what man can or cannot do. And so, you know, and then I wouldn't put, and we all know that you can't put past some people, like you say, people who are power hungry, may not be no limitation to how far they will go to reach that type of power. So, Brother Cliff, how you been, sir?
Been doing well, sir. I'm glad to see that you are fully up and at 'em again.
Yeah, well, but I told y'all, you weren't on here when I was saying this. A month ago, I had a stroke. And the first thing that left me was my voice. Mm. I couldn't say nothing. I couldn't even say two words. And of course, you know, after I came from my stroke, things start eating that I could say a word or two, but I couldn't remember. I could want to say things, but I couldn't. You know, the words just wouldn't come. I could think them, but I just couldn't say them, you know, out loud.
Yeah, they call that aphasia.
Oh, okay. I knew you would know. But in any case, that was a gift I took for granted one time, not now, because now I know how important it is. When something is taken away from you, then you take it more seriously ever than that. That's why I'm running my mouth now. I'm running today. because I think I have something to say, and I do put God put me on the earth. So if I don't have nothing to say, I know people who do have something to say, like yourself. And this thing, me and Brother Umoja just was talking. I know we all over the place, but from your perspective, because you, I think you're a very intelligent man, and everybody do have an opinion about this and about that. But I was talking about this word called immunity, and I was looking in the dictionary. You know, they got all types of dictionaries out there. They even got this thing called, I forgot what they called them. It's for the computer, but people put their own definitions in there, of course. But this word immunity, I was saying earlier that when I started reading the word immunity, I understood the part about somewhat understood the part about the physical body and the immune system. But then when the word started floating around in the courtroom, it had the same kind of action towards it, but it was just in a different atmosphere. It was in a courtroom. Some people can get away with some things and some people can't. But every time I was reading this word, I keep looking at it. It doesn't also always do what it's supposed to do, but it says it has the ability. And that was bothering me the most, that word, the ability. You know, like I say, I don't know how the human body works, but I believe that it was all created kind of, you know, ain't nobody two bodies alike, but I do know the immune system, most operate. Some people have deficiency in their immune systems. Some people have that in their immune system. I don't know what's on, in you know, in everybody's DNA. But I do know one thing. That's the physical body. And so, but this word immunity, Brother Cliff, but they say the ability to go into a courtroom and may be exempt from this or exempt from that. And when I was reading this word, Brother Cliff, it kept coming back. I kept seeing racism in it all over. That. I mean, that's the first thing that kept running through my mind was that's the same attributes that racism has, a saying. And then when I looked at the word racism, I can't, my thing, my pink ran up. But even the word racism, it just say a little bit more detail about it, like resentments and words like that in it. But it almost operates on the same point. So what do you say on that point, sir?
Well, as far as the concept of immunity is concerned, the legal system is essentially co-opted what is a biological function. Again, immunity in the medical or biological sense basically means that if a certain pathogen or a certain attacker comes at you, it can't hurt you. That's essentially what that is. If you, I'm assuming it's still the case. If you get chicken pox, for example, you get chicken pox, you develop the antibodies. The antibodies will then attack the virus that causes chicken pox if it ever comes near you again. And as a result, you don't get chicken pox anymore. As a result, you are considered immune from chicken pox because now you have something that protects you from it. And I think what they're trying for with regard to vaccinations, especially in the mass population, is this concept of herd immunity, H-E-R-D immunity, in which through a vaccination, enough people in the population develop antibodies that the virus no longer has anyone that it can attack, or it has such a hard time finding those few vulnerable individuals that it can attack. It can't get through all of those who have the antibodies to defeat it, and as a result, the concept of herd immunity comes. Now, in the legal system, it's a similar kind of a function in that there are supposedly certain things that can no longer hurt you, can no longer do damage to you. The difference is that if you're talking medically or biologically, now you're talking about something that actually happens to your body. In the legal system, it's just a matter of whether or not they say, well, okay, you have immunity from prosecution. All that means is that they're not going to prosecute you if you do a particular thing, or if you're in a particular position, or if you testify in court against someone, then they will say, whatever charges we might be able to file against you, we've agreed that we're not going to file them against you. Now, immunity isn't 100% perfect, and they're saying that even with regard to the COVID vaccine, because they're saying there's the possibility to say, for instance, you can get the vaccine, you can develop the antibodies, it'll protect you from COVID up to a certain point, and then maybe in a year or so, maybe in 2 years, maybe some of that immunity wears off so that then COVID can still attack you. Probably a similar thing with the legal system. They'll say, well, we won't prosecute you if you've committed this particular crime for X number of years, as long as you don't do that mess again. And then if you turn around and you do that same thing again, then all of a sudden they can strip your immunity from you, and then you can be prosecuted. Now, whether or not it's a racist issue, I think really kind of depends on what you do with it. It's sort of like a gun. As they say, a gun itself is not what kills you. It's the person mm-hmm. who points the gun at you and fires and pulls the trigger. So a court system may say, well, we're going to grant you immunity from prosecution in this particular instance, and then maybe that judge vacates the bench, someone else comes on, the Supreme Court changes its mind on something, and then all of a sudden you're vulnerable again. So I think that's the main place where issues come with the whole concept of immunity, as you put it, that the person who wields the power then has the ability, there's that word again, mm-hmm. to sometimes change the terms of the game. That's a little different in biology, because there's no judge or someone up there that can suddenly turn around and say that, okay, I'm going to make this virus more deadly, or I'm going to make your immune system break down. What happens there is that then if the pathogen itself changes, then that can break down your ability to protect yourself from that particular pathogen, and then you might lose some of your immunity to, say, a mutated strain of that particular virus. So I wouldn't get too caught up with the word immunity itself. It's more a matter of how people who have the ability to exploit that situation utilize the ability to exploit that situation. And then that comes down to the question, one of the things that Baba Umoja mentioned, and I agree with him to some degree, and I'm not sure I agree with him on another thing. First of all, I'm not sure that COVID-19 was biologically engineered. It's possible that it could have been biologically engineered, but there have been plagues that have hit humankind over the centuries. And there's no way there's any human being smart enough back in the day to be able to intentionally engineer bubonic plague back then. They couldn't have engineered polio and cholera and those things that essentially attacked human populations long before they even understood what virology was. So it's entirely possible that a virus such as that could have developed naturally. Supposedly viruses develop all the time in the wild. It's when human beings start going places where they're not supposed to be and start grabbing up exotic animals from places that they're not supposed to grab them and drag them out into the human public sphere and start exposing other people to them, that then you start getting these outbreaks. Where the racism in my mind comes in is how the people who are in a position of power opportunistically take a look at what's going on and say, I am going to find a way to use this crisis to benefit me. Naomi Klein, who's a Canadian, wrote a book called The Shock Doctrine many years ago. And I have a copy of the book. I never quite finished it, but the basic idea of her book is that when you have essentially systems that are in place, governing systems that are in place that have accrued a certain amount of power to themselves, but at the same time are lacking, shall we say, in ethics or a certain level of morality, those systems, those individuals who run those systems are constantly looking for opportunities to take advantage of shocks to the system, such as Hurricane Katrina. Whether you believe in the HAARP system or not, that some people believe can affect the weather, I don't know. That's another thing. I don't know whether it exists or not, but I do know there were people who were ready to exploit the turmoil that resulted from Hurricane Katrina when it hit. When the housing crisis and the subprime mortgage crisis and the speculative crisis hit and caused the Great Recession in 2008, there were individuals who were ready and they were prepared to exploit that. People who supposedly sold their interest in the World Trade Center just before the towers went down, whether they knew something was coming or not, they were very opportunistic in terms of how they exploited that particular crisis to make money for themselves. And the same thing is the case with certain individuals' actions in the wake of COVID-19. When you have a situation where all of a sudden people are afraid to come out and to gather in large numbers and a lot of your small businesses collapse, some people were, in their minds, clever enough, and that's where a lot of the things we get into stock markets and trading and that sort of thing, where people take what they call short positions on certain stocks. They actually are betting that the stock that they are invested in will fail by getting insurance to protect them in the event that that stock does fail. They're betting it will fail. When it fails, they get the payoff from the insurance and they make money. That's what I consider to be a borderline, maybe not in borderline, unethical practice that people have used to take advantage of a situation that causes other people pain. And it just so happens that most of the people who have that kind of power tend to be white men. Most of the people who are being impacted by those kinds of crises tend to be communities of color, people of color. And so as a result, the impact of what happens is racially disparate. And some of those folks who are taking advantage of this are doing it because they're racist to the core. Absolutely. But whether or not I could call the virus itself racist. I don't know that I could do that. I couldn't call the virus racist. I couldn't call the hurricane racist. I could call the actions of the people who attempted to exploit what happened as a result of it racist, because they know who they're going to hurt. They know how it's going to benefit them, and they don't care. So that's kind of how I would look at those things. Now, in the meantime, go bigger picture. You've got all these, you mentioned meetings of world leaders. You mentioned things like the World Economic Forum, for example. The World Economic Forum is where all the economic powers get together and they kind of figure out how they're going to continue to benefit from whatever's happening in the world. And because a lot of the people on the ground saw that as essentially, once again, the vulture capitalists figuring out how they're going to exploit everyone else, that triggered the creation of the World Social Forum, where you had a whole lot of grassroots and civil society organizations around the world getting together and figuring how they're going to fight back against it. So you have situations like that, and you have situations in the UN where you have the heads of state and the African Union with the heads of state, and you have all these other processes that are in place where the world governments get together and decide how the world governments themselves are going to benefit from the situation in the world. And what's lagged behind that has been a corresponding effort by the people on the ground, the grassroots communities, to get together and organize on a global level, like they're attempting to do in the African Union's Economic, Social, and Cultural Council, in the United Nations Economic and Social Council, in the United Nations Permanent Forum on People of African Descent, which they are just now starting to put together, and various other groups like that. And then there's some other organizations that are saying even those groups that are supposedly being put together to address the issues of the people on the ground aren't really addressing the issues of the people on the ground. They're still under the control of the UN, the AU, and a lot of these global organizations.
Okay.
So you're starting to see other groups getting together and forming completely independent worldwide global structures that would, at least in theory, address the issues that the people on the ground face. So that's a bit of a mouthful there.
Well, yeah, that's a mouthful. I'm going to tell you why it's a mouthful, because, like you said, you brought up a lot of, information, as far as I'm concerned. You always do. And but like I say, I still have, like I say, my own thing. So I'm not one of them type people, what they may call them people, a terrorist, or always looking for, want to overthrow the government, or it's a conspiracy theories. I told you I'm inspired by God. And my thing is, you know, peace, harmony, love, man, stand up for one another, look out for one another. But unfortunately, we live in a world where you see every day, I'm just give you a small example, just small in media. Just today, here in Baltimore, I happen to look at the news. I don't look at it that much, but they say, it was like something major has happened. And I looked at the news and they said, this guy came from Israel, got shot and killed here in Baltimore today. But yet they said at the same time, out of that same breath almost, 6 or 7 other black people got killed. But this one was different. This one was, because he's Jewish, he's white, I mean, he's this, and he's from this place. But these people, you know, happen every day to certain groups of people, you know, I mean, people just die like that every day. So, you know, death is a death, as I see it. Life is a life. But I'm just talking about how my industry takes things and build one thing up, like now it's a major disaster.
Mm-hmm.
But when it happens to people like that looks like me every day, it's just that's just another one of them taking care of the other one, you know.
Sort of like a plane crash when 300 people die in a plane crash, and including 29 Americans.
That kind of thing.
Everybody who's watching the television, they were like, oh, that's just so sad. And then when they hear the 29 Americans, they're ready to go crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, but they're kind of there. And see, like I say, that's why I was just saying when I started off this conversation, the verbiage that's being said or being heard. And then we take it as humans, we cipher it, and then we roll it around in our minds, and we come up with our conclusions. And then, like I say, yeah, you can be thinking one way, Brother Jamal can be thinking, and I can be totally thinking something totally different.
but the brain is still functioning, you know, all in all three of them, you know, but, you know, we just come up with, this is my theory, and you come just like doctors and everybody else do, you know. Well, I believe the wind blowing west. No, it's blowing northwest, you know, but it's blowing. We know that much. And
or you're looking at an ancient map of the world, which is actually the reverse of the modern map of the world,
okay.
where north is down and south is up.
Right. See, well, you know,
which explains in some graphics the notion that the continent of Africa is in some people's minds drawn upside down. But at the same time, when you look at the map of Africa with north flowing down and south flowing up, then you see the Nile River flowing down instead of up the page.
Well, see, now that makes common sense, but like I say, but we know. Now here I cover my theory again, my racism, because the books I've read, the books that was given to me, the books that I sent my children to school with, you know, they had, that's the way it's supposed to go. And why? Only conclusion I come up because they felt it, you know, for their benefit, you know, it's the reason for that. Well, somebody had a theory and they took it and flipped it upside down. And it's been that way ever since, because some people had the ability to change.
The powers that be want to control what it is that we know, see, think, and feel. As a result, you have all these right-wing politicians right now who are attempting to prevent the discussion even of the 1619 Project. They don't even want to have any discussion of the history of the enslavement of African people at all. And here's a little bit of 1984 newspeak for you, where they're saying that discussion of historic racism in the United States, they said, first of all, we should be able to discuss our successes and failures as a nation. That's the first thing they say. Then they turn around and say, all this discussion of the 1619 Project, all this discussion of all the bad things supposedly we did to black people is going to create divisiveness. That's what they say. It's just going to create divisiveness. So telling the truth is going to be divisive.
Yeah. Well, like I said, but for some people, that's their truth. You know, that's the way they see it, and that's the way some of them believe it. And that's why I want to have this conversation, ladies and gentlemen, because of this. I see more stuff that happened in this last year and a half, I mean, in the media, that really, truly amazes me. You know, now, I consider myself, I don't know, but you know, but I consider myself, I try to think, you know, think that a certain type of way. Somebody got that TV on, if you can turn it off or turn it down or something, I appreciate it. But I seen in this country where you had people marched on the Capitol, they called it patriotism and everything else, but I knew if another group of people had walked to that same Capitol in that same like manner, habit would have broke out in this country. But I also know this too, that like I said, that's where that word coming in. That was patriotism, you know. So that, you know, that's how words can affect us in certain ways. Then you had this group, I don't know how to pronounce their name, QAnon or whatever they call themselves.
QAnon.
Yeah, they believe just about everything, you know. And I mean, they will kill you. Some of them people will kill you. That's how much they believe in certain things. And you know, people all over this world will sacrifice their own lives for their belief system. So you got to be careful with, that's why all I was trying to say all this time, to go around the block once or twice, but I just want to have open conversation because my thoughts are not always your thoughts and yours not mine. But when we share our thoughts, maybe we can come to some kind of consciousness or some type of conclusion, some average way of thinking to saying that, hey, that's a possibility to look at things that way. Or that's a possibility to look at things over that way, because I never even thought about looking at it that way, or something like that. And so it expands the mind, so to speak. And so by all of us on here, and most of us deal with the newspaper and other sources of media, who will be dealing with media, books, people talking about writing books, and those words that you pen, the way things are now, see, once they come out, they don't words are printed in their book and they print it online and stuff like that, they go viral. So they always floating around somewhere, here, there, or in some book. Every time I put out a newspaper, Library of Congress gets it. And so if you in there, you in there as well. And so, you know, I told you they watch me. Everything I print, you know, has to go to them. You know, they mandate that in these companies and stuff. You know, I didn't tell them they could have it, but, you know, they don't get it anyway because, for the, you know, for purposes. But at the same time, We got media watching us, and we watching media, but media is actually watching us now. Everything where we go, where we do what we say, where we eat at, where we spend our money, where we pay our bills, they down checking everything. Algorithm, whatever they call that word, rhythm, whatever they call it, but this stuff floating all over the place, checking you out here, there, and everywhere. I told you I recently came out the hospital. They give me needles for this, and they were giving me for needles for that. Then when I do ask them, what is this and what is that? Then I got to go back to like I had to do with this thing, pick up a piece of paper and look at the library. What does this mean? First of all, I couldn't even say the word what they were giving me and let her know, try to break it down and what was in it and what does it do and what's the purpose of it for. But I'm a trusting soul. So you put your trust, don't put your trust in man. That's what God says. But, but then again, you do have to sometimes. And so all I'm saying to you all out there is this. Words are floating around. And a lot of people who's floating around take some words very seriously. They may not believe the same thing you believe, like that same word they would use when they were marching on the Capitol. I didn't see them as no patriotism, but they did. And quite a few, and it almost looks like. I don't know what the reason was for how it come, but largely, I'm thinking logically, but I saw this past election, just about half this country voted for Trump. And the only reason I could say that was, only conclusion I could come out, logically kind of conclusion was because it couldn't have been his personality. Not for my thoughts, It couldn't have been his lifestyle because he was kind of like, way out there, far too, I don't know how far he was out there. He was a woman now. He did all sorts of things out there. In the public eye, lied every day. I'm talking about election now. I'm talking about for the country. And you got all of these things. You see almost every, this man would get up in your face and lie and put you down and stuff like this. But at the same time, when it came to election time, so they tell us that just about half this country voted for him. Now, what kind of logically thinking people would do something like that? Who would vote for a person like that? Even going to get their own, huh?
Those who are protected.
I'm talking something in, but, to be honest with you guys, mm-hmm. When you was talking about immunity, first of all, my name is Walter Dean Dempsey Murphy, y'all, and I am the managing director for the National Black Unity News, and I am so glad I'm in a room with some awesome, wonderful, deep-thinking individuals. I tell you, every time I come on this podcast, I walk away a better person and with a lot more knowledge. But one of the things that I have found in this conversation, right, was talking about the word immunity, and it is been tossed around this afternoon. But one of the things that has really come down to the final core with me is that it's about protection. You're protected against whatever it is that's coming your way, whether it's in the courtroom or in your body, okay? And it's a beautiful thing to be protected against anything. And everybody wants that privilege to have it so that you are not going to be harmed by whatever it is that's going to come your way. And so, at the end of the day, I just want to put it out there because, when you talk about being protected, it's got a lot to do in this country and around the world with class. Not your color, class. And if you think that doesn't exist, ladies and gentlemen, I beg to differ with you. There are certain people who are access to certain information in certain places because of the privilege, not because of how much money they got, but because of their class. I have a brother who is a part of the Moorish Nation, and he is darker than I am. And you can see my picture up there. I'm of that color right now. He is much darker than I am, but he classifies himself as white. Not because he's a white person, because white in America is not necessarily the color of your skin. It's your class. Ask any Italian, ask any Jew. You don't want to be classified with those who want to be classified as white in America, and any one of us can do that. It's about class. So, again, it's about protection, and that class of being white protects you from a lot of stuff in America. Take my word for it. When you don't have it, you're subject to almost anything that the laws of America has been built around, and if you're not a part of that specific class, you're subject to a lot of garbage, a lot of heartbreak, and a lot of misery.
I just wanted to point it out there, y'all, before it got off, because I thought it was important that we went that way. And so,
yeah, it was important. So I'm gonna tell you why.
Murphy, can I say something, Murphy?
One minute. I'll leave my thumb. Bring you right back. That's that word that you use, protected, because just about every paragraph I saw the ability to have protected. So I hear what you're saying. Okay, back to you, Moses.
What he was saying about white folk, it is so true. Most white people around the world do not want to identify with the white people of America. They don't know that. They don't even classify them as white. These are the downtrodden of the white race in the world. They are the trailer park white, you know, except for a small percentage of them. Dempsey was extremely on the money. You know, I'm one of them crazy people that study things. I've been studying what we're talking about for over 60 years. Like when Brother Cliff was talking about the diseases. Yes, I know about the bubonic plague and the swine flu of 1919, but like over almost a third of the world got it. You know, over a third of the world got it. And something like 50 million people died from it. But the bubonic plague really did kill a third of the world. But those plagues were natural. But if you take in consideration the biological things that happen now, only a few people die. People look at COVID, and I hate to say this, it's not that many people die from COVID. The amount of people that died in the United States from COVID is just a few numbers above the amount of people who die from tobacco products in this country every year, and has been dying from tobacco products in this country every year for the last 10 or 15 years. It's not that many. But the publicity, the advertisement that they put out to the world and to this country is what I was saying made those billionaires billionaires. They knew what they was doing. And I cannot see this ailment being a natural thing. It's just not natural. You know, the coming from a bug or something, or no. COVID, and they've been working on COVID for the last 20 years. This is COVID-19. You know, that means they had a 18, 17, 16, 15, like that. They have been preparing for this. Trump shut down Obama's lab that was preparing for this because they knew they were going to eventually do it. You know, they were just preparing for it. And that's what I'm saying. This is a man-made thing, but it's not as many people died. They could calculate approximately how many people died. And it's money to them. It's money to them. So when everything opened back up, those few percent, that 0.1% of the people in this country, and one day we'll have another meeting, and we'll talk about who runs the world. And Cliff, since you study so much, you have to go back, because that's what I did. I started back at the beginning. You got to start with the black nobility, come to the Committee of 13, deal with the Council of 13, then the Committee of 300. Once you understand the power of those groups, then you can understand what is going on in the world, all the way down to the fact that young black men wear their pants down below their butts. That's the power those people will.
Well, I'm going to say this in closing, gentlemen. You know, we getting there, but, you know, I appreciate this conversation. But this is going to prove my point as well, that there's all types of people in this world that will do all types of things to you, around you, for you, and against you. So I guess that's when God tells us to be good stewards, not only of our own immune systems, our bodies. But, you know, we have, like I say, I remember during the time before my time, even during this time, just a modern way of doing it, that when a person used to pick up a book, a black person could get strung up for that. But let me, just the ability to read, they would actually kill him. You know, I know the reason now why they did it. Just the same thing happened to us in the 60s. A lot of y'all may not realize this. You may not even take my point of view on this. When we left our own community, start going into their communities, when we was allowed to go to their institutions and learn what they learned, or will attempt to learn what they learned. And they say they're going to give us 1% of the job because, you know, because the law says, now the law says you got to let this many in to go to this school, this many in to go to this building, this many in to go to this type of factory. So we got in there. And like anything else, once you get in there, and those who had the open mind and use their minds excelled. Amen. They became the president of the, even though they weren't president in title enough, but they were the head man in charge, and they was running stuff. They learned stuff. We always knew stuff. We all know that. But at the same time, when they opened up that door, when they opened that little teeny crack up, too much was open. Too much knowledge was being shared. Too much, information was going back forth, coming back to the community. That's why I believe in the 60s, that's when they start shutting us down. You know, these brothers are moving too swiftly. They getting involved. They ain't picking up guns now. They doing this and they doing that. They, you know, Cliff, all of y'all remember, we had hospitals, everything all over the place. Remember, back in the 1800s, we were building institutions, schools of knowledge and wisdom. Back in them days. But today, look at today, the concerted effort to keep you in check, because they have the ability to hold you to a certain point in this country. And, but again, they know the truth, and some of us know the truth. I mean, you know, we ain't no lower, no higher. Matter of fact, I mean, maybe a great higher, but I don't know, but I'm just saying. The point that they show to their people and the real truth is two different things. I do know this. Michael Jackson, Michael Jordan, Clarence Thomas, Oprah Winfrey, and my brother who in jail now, and all of them, you know, I don't care. In other words, I'm saying this. If you read their media, white folks' media, because they don't get ours, and read their media because they read their own stuff, and you told them that I don't care, they look at it this way, I don't care how much that brother can sing, how much he can play ball, or how much he can go to school and learn this and learn that, ain't none of them no good. That's what their media tell them, because every last one of the people that I was calling their names off have been slandered through the media, have been dragged through the media. And when you come back from their world, living in their world, and you see their world, that's the conclusion they come up with. So, yeah, you are a dangerous person. Yes, you are a murderer, a rapist. But my books tell me you do these things. My people told me, my grandfather, my grandparents, all of them told me this is what you do. When you come around us, this is how you act. And when you believe them, I say, when you believe something like that, and you really believe it, that's why I have the people in this country voting for Trump. They'd rather have him than us.
It's another version of post-Reconstructionism, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like what happened in Wilmington, North Carolina in 1898. I just finished reading a book called Wilmington's Lie, and it talked about a race riot that occurred in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is a largely black town. It was a black, and at the time, the Republican Party was a progressive party. Not anymore, but back then it was. And back then, the Democratic Party was a party of the Klan. And so you had a lot of You had white Republicans, another group called Fusionists, who were trying to essentially bring white, black, and other people of color together to live in harmony with each other. And then you had a large number of black businesses, including a black newspaper. And there were white Democrats, white Southern, essentially segregationists, who had been firing up all this animus against what they called the tyranny of Negro rule. And they did the same thing then that they're doing now. Whenever a black person comes up and speaks in too progressive a way, they attempt to call you a communist, or they attempt to say that you're trying to introduce Negro tyranny. And so they fired up a lot of their citizenry to the point where just before the 1898 elections, they threatened a number of the black residents not to come out and vote. And then when those that did come out to vote, they were attacked. Many of them were killed. Some of them were lynched. Many of them were driven out of town. The white Republican governor of North Carolina was afraid to even come to Wilmington because he knew that the right-wing Democrats were going to do something to him. And essentially what you had was a race riot that occurred in November of 1898. And as a result of that race riot in November of 1898, an election that should have easily gone to the Republican and Fusionist candidates went to white Democrats, who then celebrated the victory of democracy over communism, totalitarianism, and Negro rule. This is in 1898 in Wilmington, North Carolina. They did the same thing in Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, only in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they added the extra little wrinkle of flying little airplanes over the black economic section of town and dropping bombs on them. They did a similar thing in Rosewood. I believe that's in Florida. So it's a repeating cycle that goes over and over and over again. And whether you're one individual, like a Michael Jordan or a Michael Jackson or Oprah Winfrey or a Bill Cosby or whoever, that they think they can pull down by either by dragging your name through the mud, or they really weren't able to do too much to Oprah except limit perhaps what you could have done, or whether you're an entire population of people from the grassroots that they decide that they have to essentially impose massive white terrorism on, they're going to do what they need to do as long as they have the power, or as you said earlier, the ability to do. You know, these are things that they do essentially. They say, why did they do this? Why did they do this? They did it because they can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one powerful reason, is because they can.
Brother Cliff, thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. You have warmed my heart with that little speech, man. Thank you much. David, back to you.
Well, I'm going to just say this again. Sometimes, don't just say it this way. You can start off one way down this road and end up at a totally different location. And I came on here because I kept saying it reminded me of when I was reading the definitions. It just reminded me of racism because it had the same kind of connotation. You know, you can use them terms interchangeably, you know, with one another. But they use it for their, like I say, because they had the ability to, because they had the protection to do it and the power to do it. And so they do them. And so, but here we are in this day and time, still going through the repeated some of the same things, but now it's much worse. They fear even more now because we have tasted their fruit. We know what it's like. We know we've been there. A lot of us been in the systems and achieved great accomplishments. But they didn't know because they had this belief in their head. This is my belief. They had this belief in their head that we was not fully human, that we was so slow that we couldn't comprehend, that, you know, we just didn't know nothing. But when they actually saw you in person and saw you on the job, talk to you and reason with you, you saw something totally different. Shocked, as a matter of fact, a whole lot of them, they're shocked just being around you. Because you were supposed to act like that. I recall Brother Satav even said, he's the same age that I am. He went overseas. There are people looking for his tail. I mean, real tail, the wags.
you know, because that's what they hear. That's what they heard. It's funny, but it's the truth. And so, you know, and like I said, when you put beliefs in people, that's why, that's extremely why you authors on here, that you speak truth to power. See, I'm not afraid of white people. I'm afraid of what they can do to us or what they have done to us. But it comes a day and a time when a man got to be a man. And somebody, and I believe this, in all generations, God raises up, always raises up a group of people who will take a stand no matter what, who will dig a little deeper. That's why you had the Cliffs and Umojas and everybody else on here who dug so deep into what they do, because they want the truth. They want to get down to the bottom of it. They want to know for themselves why this is, why is that, you know. You know, since God gave you the ability to reason, so why not use it? And that's why a person like me, knowing what kind of industry I'm in, knowing that I'm 1% of a 1%, knowing that if I slip up this way or that way, they're coming for me, one form or another. Knowing this, but yet I strive on. I fear God more than I fear man. And besides, I believe God. I do. And I believe that we all capable of capabilities to make changes, not only in our own personal lives, but in people's lives all around us. And that's why I want to encourage you all before we depart that continue to do what you do. Like I said, you fear man, but that ain't the way to go. You know, you, if anything, you fear God and you do what you have to do, not just for your sake, but for our sake, for our future's sake, you know, our children's sake. I got some beautiful grandchildren, ladies and gentlemen. Beautiful minds. You sit them down, man, and they talk to you, man. They make you feel good, all warm and fuzzy all over. But then you had to send them home. Then you had to send them out into the community, not knowing they can get shot at any moment. You had to send them to school, inferior school, where they don't teach you about you. They teach you about them and their culture. Then you had to send them into workforce and every place where they're going to be spat upon, set down, held back. Then you had to help them live. They're going to pay twice as much for a house and all of these guys. You had to prepare your children for all of this kind of what you call reality today. And I don't think that's no way to raise no children in that type of fear, in that type of atmosphere. So what can you do? Only prayer. I can't do nothing for you, really. Prayer, I can help you, but only you can do you. That gifts and talents that God gave each and every one of you, only you know how God gave it to you for you to use. But what's the beautiful thing about what we are doing is if we take these gifts and talents and we come, just like this conversation we had, and brought it together, at least had a dialogue. And I heard some great and wonderful things. Nobody was fussing. Nobody was fighting. We were just discussing. And we may have some different points of view, but we reasoned together. Now, I have a lot of options. Now, when I read this thing, I think about what Brother Cliff said, Brother Murphy said. Brother Umoja said, yep. I got to check it off a whole lot of stuff. See, now my vision, my mind has been expanded. So they say once it's expanded, it don't go back to its original form. So just tonight, I'm a little sharper. And I'm a sharp brother. I'll cut you. But I'm nice. But I am. I don't say everything I need to say or don't say because I know how to say it. Because I am in media. I do have to watch my mouth. I really do. And not because I'm afraid. It's because, like I say, when you're in a world where strategic things are always happening, you have to be strategic as well. You have to cover yourself because you know what you know where you at. Uh-huh. You know exactly where you are. So all I'm saying, beware, keep your eyes open. Don't let that stop you. And if you have to, it's so nice to come on a place like this or even to talk to even know people like you to even have a discussion about me. Do you know how many some of our younger brothers that had dropped out of school who gave up on, I remember I said before, they would string you up just for reading. Now our young brothers and sisters don't even want to go to a school. Don't even want to, you know, they got all this, everything at their fingertips now, computers, everything right now. But most of them choose to be on a certain place, certain location, excuse me, y'all. But at the same time, if we don't reach out and we don't teach our own, because we already know where the other teaching is going to go. And if we don't do these type of things, then, you know, a lot going to be lost in our generation. That's why I see this urgency right now. And I'm going to invite you all and I'm going to shut it down. And Brother Cliff, especially, you hadn't taught, I got you on my book. You were the first one. But I taught you the brother. They may have told you already. I taught you the brothers at Art Social Club.
Okay.
And I'm going to have an event that's going to be my coming out. This is going to be the first time I've been out in a year, except for going to the doctor in the hospital. And I'm going to have an event. And I just called, I told my brother, I said, I'll think of a name. I thought of one a couple of hours ago. And it's called It Takes a Village. That's what I'm going to call this event. It Takes a Village. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring the baby boomers out. I ain't talking about just any baby boomer. I'm talking about the people who've been out there on the battlefield, who've been serving time in our communities, who've been, how the young people say, been putting in work, not just talking the talk. I mean, working 15 years or more. I'm going to bring those type of people there and let people from Generation X, as they call some of them, to see the works that generation before them did, and especially because the younger generation is telling me and telling a lot of us, get out the way, period. You don't know nothing. But, you know, we thought that same way, too, when a lot of the, you know, the generation gap thing. But, you know, but again, they need to see real live black people who've done real live things in their lives and still doing them for our sake, all of our sake. And I want to bring them babies in there. I want to bring the young men and women in there. I'm going to bring, like I say, Generation X and the elders in there, all going to be in one room at the same time. And the elders are going to share their stories, and the new brothers behind them are going to share a little bit. We're going to spotlight through these young soldiers coming up, millennials, some of the millennials. They're doing some strong and wonderful things. I don't even know how to get on TikTok and all that stuff now, but they do. You know, they know. They should be all, like I said, that's why it takes a village. You know, but if we don't tell our stories, nobody else will. They haven't told it yet. Not the true stories. We heard about.
Hey, I got a question.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Brother Cliff, will you be available to help out?
Who's Brother Cliff? You talking about Brother Cliff?
Yes.
He already drafted.
Okay.
He ain't got no choice in this. He is a soldier. He's one of those 15 years people. And plus, I need him. Me and him need to talk about some systems and stuff. Well, you know what I'm
saying. Yeah, because he got the audio covered.
I just hope that he's available. I just hope he ain't getting married again that day or something.
Hey, David.
Been kicked out of the house yet.
Okay.
This is Daniel. I want to raise a question.
Yes, sir.
I'm not in the political arena too much, but I try to keep up. You know, I vote and things like that. What's the thing about this Republican, this black man that spoke as a Republican? I mean, it kind of seemed like it led to some confusion of what. Can you give me some insight on that?
You talking about Tim Scott?
Yeah.
Well, Cliff, you can answer that better than I can. All I just see is pictures and stuff. I seen the Miami hat stuff on them and stuff. But you know,
it looked like they just threw him out front, like you know.
Well, Tim Scott
is the Republican senator from South Carolina.
Right, I got that. Yeah.
And I guess because of the fact that the GOP doesn't want to, I think they like to parade their few black faces whenever they possibly can. And so this year was Tim Scott's turn. I guess they figured Candace Owens had already long since used up any credibility that she might have had, and that she had a tendency to get a little too bombastic. So they decided instead they were going to cart Tim Scott out there. He'd been one of their major negotiators on a whole number of Senate battles or negotiations or whatever. And so they said, well, look, we'll show everyone how unracist we are as a party while we're trying to prevent people from studying about 1619 and while we're trying to stop people from protecting themselves from getting gunned down by racist cops and while they're trying to protect people from all the other depredations that we're opposing upon black communities. So we're going to cart out our resident black person Senator Tim Scott and get him to go up in front of everyone and tell everyone that America is not a racist country. So that's what they did. They like doing that. For a minute or two, I thought they were using my former college classmate, my former college classmate Michael Steele for that. But apparently his time at MSNBC has kind of disqualified him from being a viable spokesperson for the official GOP line because he spends too much time actually criticizing what the GOP does. So they had to go somewhere else. They had to go someone who has some Senate credibility already, and that was Tim Scott. And so now you got all the little memes, the Uncle Tim memes coming up on social media. And to some degree, as Baba David was saying, as far as words, I think it's important that people who understand the import of words and understand how to use words correctly, as Baba David does, it's important that those people are lifting their information, lifting their, well, not their truth, but the truth up, so that a lot of the disinformation doesn't stick. Like, for example, the whole concept of calling someone an Uncle Tom. I haven't read Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin, but I've read enough about it to know that Uncle Tom actually was not the villain in that story. The villain was Sambo.
That's right, Sambo.
And Uncle Tom actually tried to teach his people to essentially love their heritage and where they came from. But because Simon Legree, I think toward the end, ends up beating Uncle Tom to death, Uncle Tom has perhaps been turned into a foil. So now whenever you want to accuse someone of being a race traitor, you call him an Uncle Tom. You don't call him Sambo. I kind of wonder how easily people fall into that. But
yep.
There's an old saying, if you say a lie, you say it often enough, and you say it loud enough, people start to believe it. It's just like some of the things that I've seen on WhatsApp and even on the internet, where they, like, for instance, recently, there was this tale of this individual who they claimed was a vice president of development for Pfizer, who was claiming that the COVID-19, which technically is SARS-CoV-2, was designed to rewrite your DNA. And that's supposedly another one that said that Bill Gates admits that the entire COVID vaccine is a depopulation scheme. And then they claim to put a video of Bill Gates up there as if that proves it. Well, I watched the video. Bill Gates said that overpopulation was a problem, but never in the entire video did he say anything about any connection between cutting population and the COVID vaccine. The narrator said it. The narrator threw that in there, and then threw a couple of graphics in the middle of Bill Gates' talk to make it appear that that's what Bill Gates was saying. But if Bill Gates actually said it, why did the narrator have to cut in? Why? Because Bill Gates probably didn't even say it. You take a look at this individual who's supposedly the VP for Pfizer talking about all the things that the Pfizer vaccine was going to do to people. This guy claims to have been working with Pfizer on the vaccine. Dude hasn't worked for Pfizer in 10 years. 10 years. He's been gone from Pfizer. He was not a vice president for development. He was some vice president for some other that wasn't even scientifically connected. He's not an MD. He was a PhD. He wasn't even working on the biological scientific aspects of the virus, but because he has a PhD, they could put a doctor in front of his name. That made people think that he knew a little something about science. You got a whole lot of people like Scott Atlas from the Trump administration, who was a cosmetic surgeon, claiming to know something about epidemiology and virology. They are as different as home economics and particle physics. And yet this individual, because he had a doctor in front of his name, instant cred for people who don't know, and you put him up there and have him say something that's completely outlandish. Oh, a doctor said.
and people believe it. People buy it. People suck that stuff up. Somebody put that WhatsApp thing about the VP of Pfizer up on WhatsApp, and I made a comment about it. The person who put that comment up there immediately responded, oh, I'm going to take it down now. Because apparently that person was led down the garden path to believe that that individual, who was a supposed VP of Pfizer, actually knew what he was talking about. He did not. There is enough bad stuff that the powers that be do to our people, from COINTELPRO to the Tuskegee experiment. And by the way, the Tuskegee experiment was when they allowed us to go untreated for syphilis. Not that they gave us something, that they took people who had syphilis and lied to them and told them that they were being treated for it and didn't treat them. So all of these little things are what I call items that go into a little thing that I call the fork and tongue files, where, and I occasionally put something on my website, coombreport.com, talking about the fork and tongue files of such and so, where we are told a thing, and it is put up there in such a way as to make us think it comes from a person of authority, or a person who knows crap from apple butter with regard to what's going on. And then you have all these, this parade of people who have never taken a class in molecular cell biology, I have, who have never taken a class in epidemiology, I have, who have never gone to school, to college, surrounded by medical students, I have. And then they'll sit up there and they'll tell them all these things. And because either someone that's famous said it, who also never took a course in epidemiology or virology or anything like that, people will say, oh, it must be true. And then they'll believe it, and they'll go running off, and they'll say, they'll do stuff like, oh, 70% of us aren't going to take the shot. Now, I'm not going to tell somebody to take the shot or not to take the shot. I did take the shot. I did take the shot because I know two people from high school who died of COVID, and they were stronger than I was. And all of a sudden, they were dead. Didn't even show any serious symptoms until they died. I know of other people who came down with COVID and wound up with long-term heart and lung damage. And I got comorbidities of my own besides being 63 years old. So I'm like, at this point, the risk is a little bit too high. I haven't had a flu shot in over 40 years. But this one, the risk was higher. And so I said, okay, I'm going to try this. And I tried it. I went through a day and a half of serious flu-like symptoms, which supposedly is an indication that your immune system is kicking in. Okay. So roll the dice a little bit on that. You're rolling the dice one way or the other because they don't give you enough information to really make a truly informed decision. But every time I see somebody putting something up there from someone who is a supposed expert, and all you got to do is dig a little bit beneath the surface to find out that basically they're a snake oil salesman, and yet these people are freely marketing those individual statements and opinions as though they are fact, then that's where I think a lot of the form comes from.
A lot of it is being
led down the garden path by QAnon and some of the conspiracy theory type of.
Well, let me say this then, you know, because that's why I say information now is being thrown out there that you can go on the internet right now and get 100 million different answers to one specific question. And they will fight you tooth and nail. I heard it. Someone told me. And you know, but like I say, that's why I say you have to dig deep yourself. You know, because like I say, the decision you make in your life is going to be for yourself. You can't go on, you know, you can, but it's a dangerous thing to what I heard, what somebody told me. You better dig some things up for yourself sometimes, you know. And then you can come to some kind of conclusion, you know, well, at least you may think you stand a better chance if you dug something a little deeper yourself. But in any case, you know, we way past the hour, but we control this time right now. And time is of extreme importance in my life. I don't know about y'all, but it's important in my life because it's extremely valuable, extremely. And the conversation we had today, I also think was extremely valuable because it spanned my territory in a lot of ways. But at the same time, it's good to get knowledge and wisdom, but sometimes once your eyes are open, you might have more fear than you did before when they was closed.
And I'm going to look up those topics that Bob Emoji suggested too. I think that's very important stuff.
And connect that caught my ear, you know, because like I say, you know, like I said, I do know that, you know, man has to move quick, faster than a hurry in certain occasions. Sometimes we have to make quick snap decisions too in life. Just like that, you know, sometimes you ain't got time to even think this way or go that way. But, you know, and that's the way life is. And that's one of the biggest things that he gave man was choice. God gave man was choice. And so all I can suggest to you is choose wisely. And because the choice you make, there's going to be some consequences to it, one way or the other, some after effects. We don't care how you look at it. And so, again, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you and everyone. And we'll be back on here tomorrow evening at 7:30. But, Brother Cliff, if not tonight, in the morning, I really need to talk to you. I already put things in motion, but I already, I don't know why I do like that, you know, sometimes. But
I'll be up for a while.
Yeah, I just draft people and just assume they're going to be done. But any case.
Dave, I want to close with one comment.
Yes, sir.
Marcus Garvey said, a real man dies once. A coward dies 1,000 times a day.
Whoa. Whoa. It's a lot of times, brother. A lot of times. Mm. And I can imagine what a lot of people go through in life. You know, they duck this and duck that and did this and did that. And I remember the old saying, the old folks used to say, the ones who had kind of what they call clear conscience, that's actually good at night, you know. And because, you know, they didn't have a lot of baggage with them, a lot of stuff on their shoulders and told a lot of this and told a lot of that. And it's good. And one thing I do believe I had, and I'm so blessed with this, man, is a thing they call that peace that passes all understanding, just peace of mind, you know. No matter which way you go, I'm not perfect, nowhere near. I beat me up more than anybody can. But I tell you one thing, though, at night, when I lay my head down, I beat me up. But, you know, I am so grateful. I am truly grateful. For life for of itself. And there's all types of, I've always have been and always will be. Ever since I can recall, I think I'm going to go out that way. There's always going to be issues around me. And but one thing for sure is that that piece that I'm talking about is this, that you're not out here intentionally trying to hurt your fellow man or take advantage of him or abuse somebody, misuse somebody. And things like that, those are the type of thing, you know, where some people say they don't have a conscience or consciousness. But I thank God every day for my cause, because even though I was a child, man, I used to get beat myself up when I used to do something wrong. You know, we used to, I used to be around little tough guys. You know, they want to beat people up, man. I go along, get along, but I couldn't do that. I come home, they ain't had to do nothing to me. I was just whipping myself up. You do that. And so I started getting in the way. They ready to beat me up. But in any case, it's good to have peace of mind, and you use your mind wisely. It's a powerful tool. I mean, one powerful tool, because you just already heard it. You heard it on this call. How many great minds and how many minds are actually things? And then take that mind and use that mind not only for their own selfish reasons or for their own personal reasons, but to help their fellow man out. And this is the type of people that's on this call, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm going to say good night to each and every one of you. Thank you. Keep looking up. Keep going forward. We got work to do. Let's just do it. All right, Brother Cliff, everybody else, y'all take care now.
All right.
Night all.
David,
good night.
We're just tune in to tomorrow night's call.
Yeah, tomorrow night, 7:30 sharp.
Thank you. Good night.
Right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye.
Goodbye.